Welcome to the Empowerment Zone with Ramona Houston, where we zone in on Black and Brown relations and our journey to empowering our communities.
Thank you for joining the Empowerment Zone. I am your host, Ramona Houston.
It is March 2021, and we are celebrating Women's History Month. And what better way to celebrate Women's History Month than having a woman, a Black woman historian, a historian who writes about the history of women and whose latest book features one of America's icons, who is also African-American and a woman, Ella Baker. I am just excited about this conversation today. We have Dr. Patricia Parker with us today. Welcome to the Empowerment Zone. I am your host, Ramona Houston, and we are here to elevate and celebrate and center African-American and Latino voices and really feature people in our communities who are doing great work, who are all about empowerment and making a social impact. So today we're talking to Dr. Patricia Parker, and her latest book is Ella Baker's Catalytic Leadership. Dr. Patricia Parker is chair of the Department of Communication at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, where she is also a professor of critical organizational communication studies and the director of the graduate certificate in participatory research. Professor Parker's research, teaching, and engaged scholarship focuses on social justice leadership and decolonizing organizational communication processes. She is co-editor with Larry Frey of the University of California Press book series, Communication and Social Justice Activism. Her book, Ella Baker's Catalytic Leadership Praxis, a primer on community engagement for social justice leadership, was released as a part of that series in November of 2020. That volume, along with her book, Race, Gender, and Leadership, Other Published Scholarship, Administrative Work, and Social Entrepreneurial Activities, inform a sustained focus to intervene in problems as the intersections of power, identity, agency, and organizing. Professor Parker has applied and disseminated theoretical, informative, participative praxis for social justice leadership in a variety of contexts. As the inaugural director of the Faculty Diversity Initiatives for the UNC Chapel Hill College of Arts and Sciences, she developed the college's diversity liaison program, catalyzing a network of critically engaged faculty leaders working for equity and inclusive excellence in their respective departments. She is founder and executive director of the Ella Baker Women's Center for Leadership and Community Activism, which is a community-based, not-for-profit organization building a community power for social change and supporting girls and women's leadership development. And she also helped to establish the Triangle Women in STEM Network. Dr. Parker is a busy woman. And so we are so happy to have her here today. Welcome, Dr. Parker, to the Empowerment Zone.
Thank you.
Man, I am so excited about having you today. I am reading your book, and it's really different than what I expected. I thought I was going to read a biography of Ella Baker, and it was actually using your process of using her ideas about community organizing and applying it to a context there where you live. So, but before we get to the book, why don't you tell us, the audience, about yourself, who you are, you know, your background, your personal and professional interests, all of that.
Well, thank you, Ramona. It's just such a pleasure to be here with you. And thank you so much for this platform and for the work that you do empowering women. As you said, this is Black History Month, but I think every day is, I'm sorry, Women's History Month.
We just finished Black History Month, but we're still celebrating it.
And I think every day is a day that we should celebrate Black history as well as women's history, because of the impact that we know that we have made in the world. And so it is just indeed my pleasure to be here. I do want to say one thing before we get started. I am a communication scholar who engages with history in terms of my methodology. And I'm interested in how history is operating in the present. And I do want to give a shout out to the historians whose work have elevated me to be able to write this book, and primarily Barbara Ransby, the wonderful scholar who is at the University of Illinois Chicago, who did, in my opinion, the premier biography of Ella Baker. And so I would encourage everyone to get Barbara Ransby's book.
I'm so glad you said that. I sat up there and read your bio and everything. And I know you're in communications, but just reading the book just made me think of history, you know? And so that's why. And so now I understand why it was so different in my reading, because I came from a history perspective and actually it's communications. So I thank you for that clarity, because I sure did give you that history PhD, even though I just read the communications.
Well, I tell you, I am so in awe of historians and the work that you do. And I do try to use, and I did use historical methods. I went into the archives and I was blessed to be able to touch documents that Ms. Baker had touched when I went to the Schomburg to go through those archives and where her papers are. So I do have that perspective, but I am a communication scholar. I would tell you also another thing about me is that I am the youngest of 13 from a big family in Arkansas. I grew up in rural Arkansas in a sort of a farm environment. My parents were sharecroppers. They didn't refer to themselves as sharecroppers. They referred to themselves as renters in the early days of their marriage. But that, you know, that foundation really has had a large influence on me in terms of who I am and how I engage the world. Growing up in the South, you know, knowing that my parents had lived through the Jim Crow South and the legacies of race in their, you know, in how they became, you know, my father had a third grade education, my mother had eighth grade, but they became landowners and they, 5 acres of land and emphasized education. And so by the time it was time for me to get my education, I knew that that pathway was there for me. So that's a big part of me. I am here at UNC Chapel Hill. I've been here since 1998. And one thing that I didn't mention in my biography, that I have an appointment as the co-chair of the Commission on History, Race, and a Way Forward at UNC. And that platform, that's probably another reason you thought I was a historian. My co-chair is a historian, but Dr. Jim Lalutis was a historian here at UNC. But he and I bring this perspective to a work that is so important in the South right now, which is changing the narrative about how we talk about communities and the community engagement work and the impacts that people are making all over the world, but certainly in local communities, to change the way we talk about race and to lead, you know, sort of this transformational change. So through this commission, for which I co-chair, I bring this engagement perspective, community engagement perspective, along with the historian who is the co-chair, and then this larger commission where we're looking at archives, teaching, and community engagement as a way to change the narrative about race and the history of our university. And, you know, sort of how how that race and history is, again, showing up in the present in terms of disparities, and just in terms of the faculty ranks. I mean, diversity, equity, and inclusion is something I've been working on a lot in my career, and those disparities persist. You know, over 200 years in this at this university, there are certain structures, systemic racism and gender inequity and you know, the impacts on indigenous, you know, the appropriation of indigenous lands. Let's just start there. All of those structures persist in our current policies. And so my work is all about engaging with the people who are impacted the most with those structures. And like Ms. Baker, understanding that, you know, their power to, you know, identify those problems as they're living through them and also lead transformative change to create the world that we want to live in.
And, you know, thank you for giving us that background. I know from reading your book, it was very interesting because I could see myself being one of those people that go into communities and thinking I have the solution, you know, to your problems, and that this book really approaches community in a way using Ella Baker's model.
Yes.
That allow the community to speak and say what the problems are and what the solutions are, and let them lead, you know. And it's a crazy term to say let them lead, you know, that's you're giving them permission to lead. But I mean, that's a whole nother problem in itself. But can you just talk about your book and, you know, what did you learn from Ella Baker's model? And then what did you learn from applying it? Tell us about the book at first, tell our audience about the book, and then explain, you know, your process.
Yes, of course. So the book is titled Ella Baker's Catalytic Leadership. And yes, thank you. You're holding it up there. It's Ella Baker's Catalytic Leadership. If you think about, you know, I've already mentioned I'm not a historian. I'm also not a chemist. But catalytic, you know, so people might be familiar with, you know, a catalytic conversion in the old ways that people thought about, you know, engines and giving that power. And so my way of understanding Ella Baker's approach to community organizing is that she would catalyze people. She would go into communities, and this was, Ella Baker was as a civil rights and a human rights activist who was born in Virginia, but she was raised in North Carolina. And grew up in a place not too far from where her grandparents had been enslaved and then eventually, you know, owned that property. But she developed this understanding of the power that exists in communities, you know, for people who understand, who have an analysis of what's going on, people who are living, you know, from the time, you know, I'll just speak from my own perspective, I understand this, that from the time my ancestors were brought in chains, they had an analysis of power and were understanding that, you know, this was something to be resisted and changed and to start to trace the roots of how that power was happening. So Ella Baker has understood that she inherited this legacy of that analysis of Black people understanding how power is working to kill, to have violence against Black bodies. I mean, that's something that's evidence, but also violence of the spirit, and to you know, sort of create these spaces where Black people do not have a voice in democracy and in terms of civic engagement and having, you know, participating in this democracy and this country that we've helped to build. And so Ella Baker's philosophy, and she did develop this philosophy over her life, and I encourage folks to go out and read Barbara Ransby's book, and there are several other biographies by now, lots of people writing about Ella Baker. But she honed over 50 years this philosophy grounded in this belief in Black people, the Black struggle, and Black people having an analysis of power and working to transform those systems that were working against their capacity to participate in democracy. She developed that as, you know, when she was the first director of you know, field secretary for the NAACP. And the NAACP, of course, the premier civil rights organization, W.E.B. Du Bois, one of the founding members of that. So she was part of building up that and going into the Jim Crow South and recognizing that people who were in those chapters of the NAACP were already working on the front lines. And at that time, it seemed from her perspective that that organization was not engaging with that knowledge. These stories of how people were fighting in their local communities to vote, to resist the structures that would disempower them, that these successes needed to be elevated to the national level to inform the movement. And so she had a catalyzing approach because she would go into communities, and this is, I think, foundational. She would always assume that there is someone here working on this problem, on this issue. There is someone in this community. I want to find that person, that local leader, elevate them, give them resources, and help them in their process of connecting to other leaders. So that's what makes her approach catalyzing, just that assumption. And I think, you know, oftentimes when we go into communities and we say that we're going to help communities, or, you know, there are approaches that we sometimes think about, and especially when there is race that is structuring this, where there are white, as you know, and Dr. King had this critique of white liberalism, right? Of, you know, you, this idea that you have an understanding of your positionality as a white person going into Black communities, you understand, but in fact, sometimes you, if you go in to save, you miss the knowledge that's in the community. So that's part of what this book is about, and what Ms. Baker was doing. So she left us with that one tenet, that the people who are living through an oppression, under the heels of oppression, should be the ones who are leading the change. Our role, coming from the outside, is to support, elevate, catalyze.
I love it. And I'm glad you explained why you use that term, catalyze, you know, because I went to my dictionary trying, I was like, what is she saying? You know, because I was looking at it, I was using another interpretation. And so she's empowering, and indeed empowering the communities that she's going in to serve.
If you understand empowering, not as saving someone, in other words, correct. There's power that's already in the community. So I think that we have to use that term in the way that it's intended, right? So if empowering has to do with providing tools. So you have someone who is especially in people in vulnerable communities and disenfranchised communities and, you know, that have been marginalized by the impacts of extreme capitalism, right? Where we have situations where there's extreme poverty, right? This poverty is something, there's a condition that is chronic in the United States of America, the richest country in the world. And we have these areas of impoverishment and food deserts, for example, where people don't just have access to nutritious food, for example. So you go into these situations and you have people who are working on these issues. You know, I sometimes think about, and in my work, I've engaged with educators and schools and so forth. And sometimes there's this assumption that Black people in impoverished communities don't care about the education of their children. I mean, that just blows my mind, because you see the way that I'm talking about my specific experience in working in communities as a person, as I mentioned, a Black person who grew up in an impoverished situation, although you'll hear this a lot, we didn't see ourselves as poor, mm-hmm, but we had mm-hmm, families, we had mm-hmm, plenty to eat, we had so much love. But so as someone who grew up in, you know, these sort of Black in a Black community, the idea that people think that we don't care about our children, that we don't want the same things that, you know, other people want for their children, and the way that that Black women in particular get vilified in larger society and large these larger narratives. And so the thing that's so important in terms of empowerment is that people just need the tools to be able to do their work and be able to speak back, for example, to at PTA meetings or at school council meetings and have a space where they can practice their own voice, because oftentimes some of these social structures aren't legible, mm-hmm. right? To hear the voices of people. It's like they're designed to exclude as opposed to include and to be inclusive. And so part of the work that I did through my work at the University of North Carolina, starting to think about what Ella Baker's approach was to community engagement. I work in leadership. I'm a leadership scholar in communication. And so I wanted to find out how this legacy that Ella Baker talked about, how is that doing among Black girls? You know, in my mind, as I read and when I wrote my first book, Race, Gender, and Leadership, and in that book, I interviewed African-American women executives who were at the top senior executives all over the country. And that was when I first really started to apply Ella Baker's approach. I found, you know, this Charles Payne, who had written beautifully about Ella Baker and Septima Clark as leaders of the civil rights movement. And as I was reading that, I thought, there is a legacy of African-American, of Black women's leadership. This is what Ella Baker was drawing on. And according to her, this is passed on as we continue that struggle. She said the struggle is eternal, somebody else carries on. And so after I wrote that first book in 2005, I thought, I wanted to know, how's the struggle going? How's that leadership legacy going? Are Black girls in communities? This is where Ella Baker says it belongs. Are Black girls in communities carrying on that legacy? And I will tell you through this book, the answer is yes.
So what did you find? What is evidence of that?
Yes. Well, I had been volunteering in a local community there was a federal program called the Family Resource Center, and there was a center in this neighborhood that there were two public housing neighborhoods that were sort of right situated close together, predominantly Black, lots of teen girls there, but I was volunteering there in the middle school program, but I noticed that there were no programs for that engaged the high school kids, and especially not the girls. And I got to know the parents. And so as I started thinking about wanting to go work with girls in communities, I was thinking about a different place that everyone said, oh, this place is, you know, because, you know, there are all these narratives that swirl around places. Mm-hmm. And the parents said, well, why do you have to go over there? Why don't you just stay here? You're mm-hmm. already here and we know you, and we can help you. We'll help you with your program. That's my first clue. That's the first evidence that power and this legacy of leadership is already there. When the moms and the girls were saying, Dr. Parker, yeah, do your program here and we'll help you. Mm-hmm. Like
we'll help you.
Exactly. And I'll tell you, and I have a bit of this in the book, that at one point, one of the moms said to me, you know, you're the first Black professor we've had over here that is trying to do a program. Most of them are white that are here. Mm-hmm. And I think that says something about, you know, sort of this, the engagement, you know, that's the subtitle of my book. This is a primer on community engagement and communication for social justice. Let's think about how do we in elite spaces and universities enter into communities, and where is the opportunity? You know, I feel privileged. I feel privileged to be a Black woman at UNC Chapel Hill and being able to center this work as a part of my professional life. You know, that's you know, and there are lots of, I've heard from other Black scholars that oftentimes the academy doesn't validate that kind of work.
Exactly. Right?
That speaks to, you know, I think what this, what my sister was saying in communities when she was saying, you know, the Black professors don't come up here. And oftentimes activism is not something that has that we can see as a part of our professional life and engagement. It's seen as our service work and not as scholarship. And so this is one of the things that I wanted to elevate with this book. And I know that I'm not the only person who's doing this work. And I think that that's changing a bit in terms of African-American women being able to, Black women, Black scholars being able to do this work. So that's the piece of evidence they're saying, we're going to help you. And then that the way that the girls were, you know, they just showed themselves strong, you know, in creating these spaces and the wisdom that they brought to our conversations of thinking about and understanding from the very beginning why this work was important, why it was important to have these spaces. And that's happening all over the country, I think.
And you said a lot about, you know, we know the challenges, whether we have education or not. Our communities know the challenges we face, and we do have the solutions, even young girls.
Yes.
You know, and so that's powerful in itself, because like you said, a lot of people come in from the outside thinking that they're going to have all the solutions when the solutions and the leaders are already there. Like you said, they just need the tools and the resources to really magnify their voices and their solutions.
Yes.
So from your work, can you share with our audience some of the outcomes you would like them to know in terms of this type of work of going into communities and promoting social change?
Yes, absolutely. Well, if people will get the book, they will find that I have in each chapter that, you know, I have tools, lessons learned, and specific communication practices to do this work. And there are three parts these are the takeaways that I want folks to have, the areas where I want them to think about these takeaways. So the Ella Baker's approach, she left us with this wisdom for entering community. So that's the first thing. So what do you do to prepare yourself? If you're a scholar, if you are working at a nonprofit, if you're wherever, if you're thinking, I'm going to start engaging with the community, what do you need to know before you go in, before you enter those communities? And then the second thing is, once you're entered into the communities, how do you create participative spaces, a space for participation where all voices can be heard and can impact the outcomes of your work together? And then the final stage, you know, it's not a stage, but these are things that to keep in mind. So entering, creating those participative stories. And then the third is, that's where the catalytic work. Once you're doing your work together, how can you catalyze storytelling? So this is where those voices are going to get out and having the impact. And by storytelling, I'm talking about, for example, in our work, we created one of our major initiatives that the girls led was to have a community festival, a community festival that was like one of our very first products. And that was a way that they organized that. And in the book, you'll see that I show myself as vulnerable because, and it's one of the strengths that people have told me that they get from the book. I'm a Black woman who grew up in an impoverished area. So I have a lot in common with the girls and their moms and some of the other allies. And yet I missed so much because I, you know, even as I was trying to follow in Ella Baker's footsteps, there were times when we, you know, my students and I, you know, sort of had studied and we were thinking about this work in such a special way. But there were times when the girls' voices were diminished, and we had to come to terms with that. And this community festival was one example. One of the first workshops we had was, let's think about, you know, what's the activist, you know, what are we going to do as for our project, that they're going to lead a project. And the first thing they said, let's have a party. And we were thinking, oh, and then they mentioned this other project, this dumpster project, that where we knew that the town had been involved in this. And we immediately, the adults, quote unquote, in the room said, we identified the dumpster project as something that would be right at the heart of taking on City Hall. And, and it was a disaster. And it was like, you know, it just didn't do anything that we wanted it to do. And in fact, it wasn't a disaster, because part of what we did was to lay the groundwork for the party that they said that they wanted to have in the beginning. And when we had that community festival, it engaged the whole community. Mm-hmm. And it brought together all of these, you know, the different aspects of the community to help on this project. And it was just sort of revitalized the community in a particular way. So those are the takeaways that I want. Thinking about entering communities, participate, creating a space for all voices can be heard and can impact decision-making, and then catalyzing these actions, storytelling, so to have multiple impacts.
Well, I surely appreciate you sharing all this information. It's a wonderful book and all the lessons you've learned. Is there anything you want to leave our audience with in terms of any calls to action, how they can get in touch with you if they want to learn more about your work and the center's work?
Yes. Well, I would say that in terms of a call to action, you know, I'm not sure who all, you know, who is in your audience, who I know that you have a wide range of impact. And so I want to start with the scholars and some of the leaders and professional organizations who are thinking about engaging with communities. I would say that a call to action is to, even within COVID, to try to create those spaces for local voices to hear them, to find their roots toward this collective work that is about to happen. I think that we're in a time of a great turning. There's an opportunity for people to start thinking about everybody is thinking about, how can I be part of this social justice movement, a place to recognize our own humanity and the humanity of others. And so I would say that's a major, this is what I would say is the call to action. Find your, create those spaces where individuals can find their roots toward collective action. And I do want to emphasize, that's something that's in the book that I think is an important theme that Ms. Baker elevated. Sometimes people find social justice and it's, you know, it's all about them and their leadership. this idea of individual roots to collective impact, I think is a key call to action.
I appreciate that call to action for scholars, you know, because that is part of, they are a part of my audience, and I'm sure they appreciate that advice.
Yes, thank you. And I'm happy, I'm at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. I am, my website is there at unc.edu. And my email is readily available at UNC Chapel Hill on that website.
Well, thank you, Dr. Parker. This has been an incredible conversation. The time went by so fast. I had some more questions I wanted to ask you, but I really, really appreciate you coming, and especially coming on Women's History Month. I'm so, congratulations on your new book. I'm so happy for you, and I'll be promoting it in my networks.
Thank you.
And it's been a joy to have you, and you're always welcome to come back anytime.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Hi, we have Dr. Patricia Parker here with us today, and she's going to give us a strategy for college success. So Dr. Parker, could you tell us what schools did you attend? What were your majors? And then what is that one piece of advice you would give students to make sure that they're successful in college?
Oh, of course. Thank you very much for the opportunity to engage with this important question. So I was born and raised in a small town in Arkansas, and the youngest of 13. And I was the sixth and rather the seventh in my family to attend the small liberal arts college that was very near this the small town that I grew up in. So that was Arkansas Tech University. So I got my undergraduate degree there in speech, theater, and journalism. And then after I graduated from Arkansas Tech, I moved to California, and I wanted to use my degree. I wasn't sure if I was going to go into I wanted to go into the communications field in some regard. So I decided to get my master's degree, and I was accepted as into a program at California State University at Long Beach in their communications program, speech communication. And that's when I got the bug to be a university teacher. I was a teaching as I was an instructor, graduate instructor, taught my first class, public speaking and small group communication. And I'd have that bug bit me to stay in academia. And then after that, I did work for a while teaching in my field as an adjunct professor. And then I got my PhD from the University of Texas at Austin. So from those experiences of being in the academy, undergraduate and graduate degrees, I would say that persistence is the advice that I would give any college student. Persistence in, you know, if you get, you know, let's say that you get you don't get the grade that you want in a particular class. A lot of students will who are high, especially high achieving, if they get a C on a test or a C in a grade, they just think, and especially women, unfortunately, this is true. There's research out there that says that for women, they will just drop the class and think, for example, I can't be in sciences or I can't be in these different areas. For me, it was about, can I be a university professor? And there was a woman at the University of at California State University who told me, you will be a great professor and you should go to the University of Texas because that's the best school in our field. And someone just telling me that helped me to believe that. So I'd say persist, find someone who can validate and affirm you. Look for someone who's going to affirm you in your aspirations and keep going.
Thank you so much for that great advice. Persistence, find someone who will affirm who you are and your talents and abilities and keep going until you finish. Yes. Thank you so much, Dr. Parker. Great advice.
A special thank you to the incredible team of the Empowerment Zone. Terry Ungully, theme song, NADWORKS, digital support, and of course, our featured guest.
If you enjoyed my podcast, please subscribe. We are on all of your favorite podcast platforms. Be sure to rate us on Apple Podcasts too. Thank you for your continued support.